Hello, and welcome to show number 2603 of Eyes on Success, a weekly program empowering the visually impaired with expert advice, personal stories, and the latest in technology and accessibility. I'm Nancy Goodman-Torpy.
And I'm Pete Torpy.
I make lots of boxes. Anytime I want a box for something, it's all going to sound silly in the end because, you know, it's just fun. And so let's factor in a whole bunch of the cost for just having fun and doing something that's intellectually stimulating and really fun to do. So all that's what really why I'm doing it. It's certainly not to make objects.
And today's guest will explain to us how, using 3D printing, she can make much more than just boxes.
We'll talk with Judy Dixon about her most recent book about 3D printing for blind users. She explains how tools like OpenSCAD, makerspaces, and affordable printers enable creating tactile maps, braille covers, and many different practical everyday objects. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip comes from Judy Dixon.
Even if something might seem to be difficult to do, if it's something you really want to do, go for it. I'm sure you'll find a way.
And you certainly have, especially with this 3D project of yours. You started out not knowing a whole lot about it and got into it incrementally, step by step. And now you're pretty advanced, aren't you?
And that's been the fun thing about it. It's really great.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
Let's start by meeting Judy.
Today's guest has been on the show many times in the past, and she is not only fun to talk with, but we always learn something interesting from the book she's written. And today we'll be talking about her new book. So Judy, before we do that, tell us who you are and what you do.
I am Judy Dixon, and I am happily retired.
Now, we've also done episodes where we've spoken with you about what used to be your day job. Can you remind people what that was?
Let's see if I can remember. It was a while ago. No, I'm kidding. I used to work for the National Library Service for the blind and print disabled. I worked there for 43 years. And I don't know how that's possible, considering I'm so young, but 43 years, and I am fully retired as of October 2024.
So I know you also have a million hobbies, one of which is cross-country skiing. Can you update people on this year's Ski for Light program?
Ski for Light is going to be in Granby, Colorado, the week of February 1st to 8th. And this year it is completely full. We have waiting lists. I think this is the first time in Ski for Light's existence we have a waiting list for guides. So it's great. And it's a wonderful program, and I encourage everybody to take part. Last year was our 50th anniversary.
Congratulations on that, too.
Yes.
Well, Judy, the latest book that you wrote is really interesting, and I wouldn't have thought a blind person would be interested in this. It's about 3D printing. And we talked to you several years ago, and you said you were going to get into 3D printing, and you did with a vengeance. So tell us a little bit about what 3D printing is, and we'll get into some more details.
Okay. I don't know why they call it printing, because it's not really printing, but it is a way to make three-dimensional objects. And you use a machine that is called a 3D printer that basically makes what the object that you send it from a computer, and it makes it by putting down layers of filament, which is plastic, and building those layers into what the 3D printed people call a model.
What I thought was great about your book was you really made it seem possible that blind people can really do this in a practical way. I always thought you had to use some CAD tools to design it visually on a computer screen, and work a lot with your eyes, but you found some very interesting ways of not using your eyes and making it work anyway.
A CAD program on a visual screen is certainly one way to do it, but there is at least one text-based CAD program called OpenSCAD that lets a blind person make their own files to 3D print. The other thing about 3D printing is there is literally millions of things you can download and print without having to touch CAD at all. So there's several ways to do it that make it very possible for a blind person to do it independently.
CAD, for anybody who doesn't know, is computer-aided design, but it's a great mechanism for creating the design, layout, construction of whatever you're interested in building.
You talked about a lot of templates being available online. You can just take these electronic designs and more or less feed it to your printer and output whatever you want. There's a huge variety of things available, right?
It's amazing. I think I described this in my book, but I don't know why I got the idea. Light switch plates are just so, I don't know why, I like dual purpose objects. I have a stapler that also has a scotch tape dispenser on it. And just, I like objects that can take the place of more than one thing and occupy the same space. So I decided to go looking for a light switch cover that had a hook on it. Thought that would be a cool thing for my closet. Well, I've not only found a light switch cover with a hook, I found a light switch cover that has five hooks and a shelf. And I printed that, and it now lives in my closet with, I keep my color identifier on the shelf.
That is pretty cool, and it sounded like when you were doing the search, you found lots of different options, didn't you?
What was it, 4 million and something?
I think that's what you said in the book, and I found that hard to believe.
Well, I think what it really was that it found light, switch, and cover, and every single thing that had any of those, you know, probably hook, and every word in my search, I think it found.
So with a regular web search, there's a syntax where you can specify that you want this term and that term and that term, not or. Is that possible searching the database of 3D printed designs?
Probably, but I didn't do it that way.
Could have saved yourself some trouble.
Could have. But it didn't matter. The most relevant ones were first, and that was what I was looking for.
Oh, well, that helps. That's a pretty good search tool.
So that's what's available in a really simple way, designs that other people have created and are willing to share. But you also mentioned a tool that is text-based, wherein you can design your own designs. Tell us a little about that and how it works.
It's called OpenSCAD, OpenSCAD, and it's a free downloadable program that you basically specify shapes, like a cube and a cylinder and a sphere and things like that. And then you add and subtract other shapes. So the example I give in the book is my husband lost a button off his coat, and I was like, oh, what a nuisance. I don't want to go buy buttons, and I don't want to sew on buttons. I can make a button that looks just like that. Well, it was a coat button, so it was a kind of flattish button, almost an inch in diameter, and it had a little rim around the edge, but it was flat. It was a pretty easy button to make. And so what I did is specified a cylinder, and then I took away another cylinder that was only half the height of the button and 80% the diameter of the button, so that it made the rim around the edge. And then I took away two little cylinders from the middle to make the holes to sew the button on. And that's how OpenSCAD works. It's you specify shapes, and then you can add shapes, and then you can move your focus around so that you can operate on any part of that shape that you want to.
What I thought was especially cool about that button description in particular was that you incorporated the lines of code that you wrote to create the button. And the first time you listed the lines of code, of which there were only 5 or 10, you had a description, an explanation of every single line of code. This makes the button. This takes away the hollow part at the top. This takes away the holes. You even described the last line that was just a closing curly brace. And then you put it all together so people could see how the code would look, and you'd already explained how it would work.
I thought that made sense.
I thought it was great.
And it was a very concrete example of how these tools work and really how easy it was. The other thing you alluded to in your response and you talked about in the book was the tools that you could use that would tell you what the final image would look like using some AI tools on the net.
Yes, there's something called 3D Make, which is a program, again, another nice free downloadable. It's a command line program. It means you have to go to a command prompt and type commands to use it. But it's a program that can do that. You can put in a key if you have one for one of the AI services. Like, actually, I think it uses Gemini. And it will describe your model, and it does a nice job. You can also use, you know, screen reader tools like Jaws Picture Smart or something like that to describe the models. Knowing what my model is going to look like has not been much of a problem. There are enough tools to do that.
That has to be a real big help, because it's one thing to put in some text commands and think you did the right thing. But, you know, if you miss by some orientation or one number, the design can be totally different than you expect. So it's great to be able to confirm what it looks like.
That is true.
These types of tools are becoming more and more affordable these days, and I think one can buy one for not too much money. And also, they're available at makerspaces. Tell people about makerspaces and the availability of these tools in general.
Well, the printers are becoming a lot more inexpensive. I do caution people about buying a really inexpensive one. You can buy a 3D printer for $200 or $300, but you're going to get a very tiny one, and you'll only be able to print very tiny things, and pretty soon it's not going to work. But for $500 or $600, you can get a fairly decent 3D printer. And there are makerspaces at public libraries and colleges. There's actually a makerspace near my house that the public library has 4 or 5 3D printers, and it has 3D scanners and all kinds of cool stuff. So it's possible to go to a makerspace and kind of learn about how 3D printing works and what's involved. There are a few makerspaces, most notably Mountain Lakes Makerspace at the Mountain Lakes Public Library in Mountain Lakes, New Jersey, that has really gotten into accessibility and all of that stuff in a major way. But even any makerspace would be able to give somebody an idea of what 3D printing is about.
When you say that these inexpensive 3D printers can only make tiny models and a reasonably priced one can make reasonable sized models, what kind of sizes are you talking about?
Oh, the little ones are maybe 4 or 5 inches square and high, you know, maybe a 4 or 5 inch cube. The 3D printer that I have right now can do, they call it build volume. And mine does like 10 inches by 10 inches by 10 inches. I've had it for almost 3 years, and it's been big enough now, but I'm in the process of buying a new 3D printer, so because I want a bigger one.
And you mentioned in the book that there were various types of 3D printers and various materials you can work with, from metals to different kinds of plastics, some that are soluble so you can get rid of the excess parts easily and stuff. And it's just amazing. You can get into a lot of detail here, can't you, with these printers?
You really can, and it can get complicated fast.
Can you describe the actual process of creating a 3D printed object?
There's kind of 3 parts to the process. There's getting the model, there's what they call slicing the model, and that's actually the most complicated part for a blind person, because almost all of the slicing software that comes with printers is inaccessible. And I mean completely inaccessible. Button. But now there are slicing software packages that are accessible, and that 3D Make that I mentioned, that has a slicing option as well. So it can do the slicing is the process of preparing the model for your particular printer and your particular filament and how you have everything set up. That's the hardest part for a blind person.
And that step is necessary because basically when you print your object, you're putting down a layer or a slice at a time. So you need to define each slice sequentially.
Exactly. And that's what it does.
And you also have to worry about structural support or even temporary supports when you're making something that sticks out over the edge or something like that. Does the software take care of that, or you have to think about that?
The software takes care of that, at least some software package. The one that I've primarily used so far is called Simplify 3D, and it's a software package that costs $200. But when I go to slice something, it'll tell me this model requires supports, but it can also put them in automatically. There are options for you to specify how you want your supports and place them where you want them. But since I can't do that, I just let it, hey, make your best guess, go for it. And it will put them in automatically. But my new printer is going to have two extruders, and one of those extruders is going to have soluble support filament. So I don't care if it wants to put in supports. I can just throw it in the bathroom sink and let them melt away.
Oh, because otherwise you would have to use sandpaper and sort of break these parts off at the appropriate places. That's not easy if you can't see, right?
Well, that's not the not seeing part, I think, is not the hardest part. It's just not easy. Because, I mean, if I break something, being able to see would really help that much with where it's going to actually break. I don't think it would.
So it would not be worthwhile to buy a $500 3D printer to make a button. So I assume you've amortized this expense over more than one object. What kinds of things have you made with your 3D printer?
Oh, gosh. I make lots of boxes. Anytime I want a box for something, it's all going to sound silly in the end because, you know, it's just fun. And so let's factor in a whole bunch of the cost for just having fun and doing something that's intellectually stimulating and really fun to do. So all that's what really why I'm doing it. It's certainly not to make objects, but I have made a lot of objects. And I've made, I had my AirPods. And like every time I set them down on my desk, I would just take them out to do something, to answer the phone or whatever. And I'd set them down on my desk and they kept moving around. I'd go to look for them and, you know, touch is one of those things that are so light. You touch it, and it's gone. It's like, wait a minute, I'm really annoyed with this. And I'm not going to put them back in the case every time. So I printed a little rectangular object about the size of a business card, but thick enough with holes in it so I could put magnets in it. And I put the magnets in this little business card size thing. And now when I take my AirPods out, I set them on the magnets and they don't go anywhere. So I use my 3D printer to solve problems and reduce frustration. And I've made plenty of templates for things. And I was like cookie decorating and things like that. So because I'm not a very good cookie decorator, but if I have a guide, then I can do a much better job.
That does sound like fun. I'm curious, you started out by giving us the example of making a button, which is rather small. And then you told us that your current printer would print something up to 10 by 10 by 10, and you were looking for a larger printer. What do you envision printing that's larger? Not quite a house yet, I guess.
Braille book covers with Braille labels on them.
Interesting. And you can actually print the Braille right onto the cover, I guess.
I can.
Which brings up another section of your book where you talked about a handful of organizations that will make or work with you to make 3D printed things that are specifically geared to people with vision loss. Can you talk about some of those? They're pretty cool.
Oh, the primary one is an organization called C3D, S-E-E-3-D. And it's SEE3D.org. And it's an organization in Cincinnati. And the things that they will print anything. It doesn't even have to be related to blindness or anything. They'll print absolutely anything anybody's interested in. Or they will, if they don't have it already in their library, they'll find it and print it and send it to you for free. And this is, you know, a really easy way to do things. That's what they do. They print things for education. They have all kinds of packages that they've put together for the education community. They'll print buildings. They'll print all kinds of things. Ski for Light, as I mentioned, had its 50th anniversary last year at the Marriott in Provo, Utah. And I worked with them. We created a model of the Provo Marriott just for fun. And that came out really nice.
And you've also used this to print out tactile maps.
Yes. There's a website called Touch Mapper that will, you put in an address and it will produce a map with that address as the center point of the map. And then it can produce all different resolutions. So you can have, you know, just the streets within a couple of blocks, or you can have practically the whole town. And it does an amazing job.
That has to be pretty useful and fun. I bet you've never seen some of these places from an aerial view.
Yes, and there's a park near our house, and I knew there was a park, but I had no idea how big it is. It's much, much bigger than I ever thought it was, and it's right there. I mean, you know, if I could see, I would have seen this park.
We've been talking about 3D printing and how it's possible for somebody who's blind to do it. What kind of special tips and special techniques do you have for people who are blind who want to get into 3D printing?
Asbestos fingers.
Asbestos fingers? Oh, because the plastic is so hot when you're done.
Well, I have gotten good at touching it, but you do have to be extremely careful. I'm touching it while it's printing. You're not supposed to do that.
Oh, you're brave. So do you not have, if it's still that hot, do you not have to worry about like ruining the surface or making a dent in it?
Yes. No, it cools quite quickly. It's not that hot. When it's finished, it's not that hot. You can touch it.
As a tip for our low vision listeners, it is possible to obtain the filament in a whole array of colors. So if you need your object to be high contrast or you need a lot of yellow or whatever, you can make that happen. And then that makes it easier for you to manipulate the object that you've made.
You can even get glow-in-the-dark filament.
Ooh. Don't touch that when it's still hot.
Well, it sounds like you've certainly had fun with these 3D printers and a lot of enjoyment you've gotten out of it, as well as made some useful items for yourself.
I have. It's been huge fun.
Well, Judy, tell us what the name of this interesting book is and where people can get it.
The book is called 3D Printing, What to Know and How Blind Users Can Make Their Own Objects. And it's available from National Braille Press. It will be in hard copy Braille, electronic Braille, and Word.
And you have a number of other books that are available at the National Braille Press. Can you sort of highlight some of them for our listeners?
Well, the one I did last summer is called AI on the iPhone, or something similar to that. And it talks a lot about AI and what it is and how to create prompts. And then a lot goes through a lot of apps on an iPhone that you can use that use AI to do all kinds of fun and cool things.
And you've actually written quite a number of books, and we've interviewed you about several of those. And we will have links to those episodes in the show notes that go with this episode. So if people want to know about photography or whatever, exercise, my gosh, you have written so many books on so many topics.
And if people had questions for you, could they contact you somehow?
Yes, my email address is Judy, J-U-D-Y, at judydixon, judydixon.net.
In your book, the last several chapters are all about resources, but are there a couple of places that you would point people to as a kind of get started place to go after they've read your book?
I think that people can evolve into 3D printing, which is one of the cool things about it. You can do it as order something from C3D and that's that, or you can have something printed somewhere else or go to a local makerspace. If you get your own printer, you can still just download objects and not worry about much else than that. A lot of people do that. And certainly Thingiverse, Thingiverse, is the primary place where you can find 3D printable objects, again, for free. And the other thing, once you do decide to make your own objects, then OpenSCAD, and there's a lot of OpenSCAD tutorials and books on OpenSCAD, and I list a lot of those in the appendix of the book. I also started a listserv called 3D Printing Access that is also listed in the book, to where people can talk about 3D printing accessibility and get help from other people on the list. I was amazed. There's over 100 subscribers already.
Well, that's terrific. And it sounds like people can participate at many levels, from beginner to advanced.
That's right. That's one of the cool things about 3D printing.
Those are just some of the resources that are listed in the book. There are many, many others. And also, in the course of the show, Judy talked about makerspaces. And if you don't know what that is, a makerspace is a space that's open to the public. Some of them charge membership fees, but they have all sorts of tools that you can use to make things. So they frequently have 3D printers, but they also have band saws and pottery wheels and maybe even a loom, whatever kind of thing you want to make. They frequently have the equipment to enable you to do that. And they are also full of people who are happy to exchange ideas and give advice and get advice. And they're terrific resources for the community.
And if you're looking for any of those resources, just look in the show notes for this episode, which is episode 2603. And in the show notes, in addition to the resources, we'll have a number of links to previous episodes in which we talk with Judy about some of her other fun and informative books, as well as an episode where she talked about her previous role at NLS.
That's it for today's show. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about the National Library Service, where Judy used to work. They offer many ways to enjoy audio and Braille content through their BARD system. We'll talk with Don Olson about the various platforms that are available, including BARD Express and mobile apps. Learn about eligibility for these free government services and how technology is modernizing digital reading.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, available wherever you get your podcasts.
For show notes, resources, and more information, visit our website at eyesonsuccess.net.
Thank you for being part of our community. Until next time, I'm Peter Torpy.
And I'm Nancy Goodman Torpy. Thank you for listening.